So the other day, I found out that the CIA is preparing some kind of criminal referral against me, a crime report, to the Department of Justice on the basis of a supposed crime I committed. What's that crime? Well, talking to people in Iran before the war. They read my texts. So the crime under consideration apparently would be the Foreign Agent Act or something like that, acting as an agent of a foreign power. And I don't expect this to go anywhere. I'm not too worried about an actual criminal case against me for a bunch of reasons. One, I'm not an agent of a foreign power. Unlike a lot of people commenting on U.S. politics and global affairs, I have only one loyalty, and that's the United States, and have never acted against it. Its interests are the only interests I care about because I'm from here and I have a lot of kids. So that's not a concern. I've also never taken money from anybody. Don't need it, don't want it, and that's provable. And moreover, it's my job to talk to everybody all the time and try and figure out what's happening around the world. That's literally what I do for a living. And I'm not going to stop doing that, nor should I don't think. I'm also an American. I can talk to anybody. I have no secrets to divulge. So legally, I think the case is ludicrous, and I doubt it will even become a case. I'm bringing this up for a couple of reasons, though, and they're pretty obvious. One is that countries tend to become more authoritarian in wartime. It's just the nature of war. People are dying. The stakes are high. People's emotions have risen to a very high point, to a crescendo. And so there's much less tolerance for any kind of dissent in the homeland. The irony, of course, is the United States fights wars on behalf of freedom, but there's always less of it here in our country during war. So that's a widely recognized phenomenon, and it's likely to happen now too. Another point to make that is worth knowing is that the USIC, the intelligence agency, spy on Americans. Now, you probably knew that, and it's been revealed a lot, including by Julian Assange and Ed Snowden, both of whom are threatened with death for revealing it, but everyone knows. But it's probably a little more widespread than most people understand, and it's outrageous. There's no justification for your government, which you own, you're a shareholder in it, you pay for it, to be violating your privacy like this. But it happens all the time. And in fact, one of the reasons that CIA or people within CIA, just to be clear, it's a huge, sprawling, disconnected agency. What it does in a specific case doesn't represent what everybody in the building thinks, but there are some people who are mad at me for my views about Israel. And they have some latitude. And one of the reasons they pass on criminal complaints, in effect, to law enforcement is to justify warrants for spying on Americans. So that is an absolutely real thing. But the main reason they do it is to leak the existence of the investigation, such as it is, to the media and then humiliate and terrify the subjects of this op. And that's, of course, happened to me repeatedly, many times, including in famously 2021, when I was still at Fox News and trying to set up an interview with Vladimir Putin, and the NSA, I heard from someone there, had grabbed my text messages with an American citizen and had leaked them to news outlets. Those texts were basically my attempts to set up an interview with the foreign head of state, and they leaked them to the New York Times in order to stop the interview, which they successfully did, by the way, and they admitted that they were spying. I mean, this is not a fantasy. It actually happened. They did it again 2 years later, my second attempt to get a Putin interview. I managed to get it anyway, and they've done it since. And so when you get a call from a reporter who knows the contents of your texts, it's pretty clear something's going on. None of this, in my judgment as of right now, is a huge threat to me, so I'm not making this video to complain about it or whine or ask you to send me money because I'm under attack. I'm saying it because it's true, and you should know what your own government is doing, and you should know what the stakes are. And you should know that a lot of what happens in this country that affects outcomes happens behind the scenes. Some of it is legal, some of it is not, including what I'm describing now. But it has an effect. And the intel agencies, again, not everyone in the intel agencies, because there are decent, hardworking Americans who work in the intel agencies are Americans, just like there are decent, hardworking Americans who work at the DMV. But there are also people with agendas and grudges and no sense of restraint.
The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globals have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen. Right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I am Chase Geyser, joined by the distinguished Jason Hollis, whom I met, I don't know, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible dude. And, you know, I invited him to come on when I was with him yesterday, and I didn't know why. Like, really why. It's like, all right, you know, there's this Iran stuff going on. There's this massive conflict that's taking place. Everybody wants to hear about the breaking news. Is BB dead? What's happening in Iran? Are we going to World War IV, World War III, whatever the hell you want to call it? Is the economy going to totally collapse? But there's something incredibly relevant about you, Hollis, that now I understand. Ultimately, we're in this like massive war between good and evil. And you've seen the undercarriage, you've seen under the belly of the beast with your work in Hollywood.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I just wanted to hear from you kind of your takeaway. I don't want to go into too many details about, hey, you left LA because of COVID and then you started your own club. But we can talk about, I want to talk about your club at the end. But everybody knows that story. Everybody's been through that story. Like, I want to hear your real, just like almost subconscious take, maybe some examples about what's going on in Hollywood and how you think it ties into these like global socioeconomic conflicts that we're in.
Sure. Hey, I think first and foremost, I think we have to kick this thing off with a plug, man.
Do it.
Ultramethylene Blue, ladies and gentlemen. This is my favorite product in the world. Alex Jones is under attack right now. The InfoWar is under attack. Everybody needs to go to the Alex Jones store right now and buy this product. This is my favorite product. I've been on like not lots of nutraceuticals and peptides, but Ultramethylene Blue, this is the real deal. It's unlimited power. Get it from the Alex Jones store right now, man. Support the InfoWars. This is it. This is my favorite product out of the Alex Jones store. So back to you, Chase Geyser.
Well, dude, like we were sitting together a couple of weeks ago for a podcast in this very room, and we started getting into it a little bit, and you had some like very interesting things to say, and I'm not going to name any names. I don't expect you to name any names, just about like what's really happening with these mega artists in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, I think all of our problems overseas and like with our monetary system, all of our conflicts are from the military industrial complex, CIA specifically. Obviously they're coming after Tucker, like we just saw and said.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, everything that we're getting from Hollywood is really just the CIA. Like Mark Levin is the way that the CIA talks to Donald Trump, and Hollywood is the way that the CIA talks to children. You know what I mean?
Right.
So can you just like share what the hell is going on?
Well, I mean, there's a theory, and I believe this theory to be true. There's been many documentaries on it of the CIA creating CAA, Creative Artist Agency. So if you look at Creative Artist Agency now, you've got, you know, the Bushes, you've got the Clintons, you've got the Obamas, the Bidens, Kamala Harris. So if you look at that structure of who they represent, and then like Billie Eilish, Beyonce, you know, these different stars, you can really kind of start to draw a line between narrative. A lot of the artists come out with the same talking points, you know, they seemingly hate America. Mm-hmm. They don't like anything that's happening. when it's time to vote, you'll see they all have the same talking points. And it's, yeah, I mean, I fully believe that CIA is deeply involved in Hollywood and positioning artists and creators, you know, kind of forcing them into a mindset, thinking. It's interesting. I think that MK Ultra is also very deeply based in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at a Britney Spears, you can look at a Demi Lovato, you can look at different people, look at behaviors, and there's only really one, I think, end solution. And it's MK Ultra. It's being groomed since birth. You know, I think Disney's a big part of that. I think that you see a lot of the young Disney stars. There's just so many problems with assimilating back into the real world. You see them mentally; they're shot. I mean, Hollywood's very dark. You know, I was watching something the other day on X, and it was these different actors and actresses that all had the headline, you know, "I escaped Hollywood." You know, it's deep, it's dark. There's lots of secrets. And I think what's interesting now is, like, you know, in the early 90s, 2000s, we weren't processing this. I think with everything just kind of being transparent now and people doing their own research and digging in, I think that it's really kind of opened people's minds up to the fact that, yeah, this can be very demonic.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind for me is, how do I word this? There was a conspiracy theory starting at least 10 years ago, maybe even earlier, but it really gained traction under the first Trump administration, that the entire politics of the world, the entire spectrum of global politics, was being run, coordinated, orchestrated, and manipulated by a class of satanic pedophile elites. And it sounded so ridiculous. You know, the with the Q stuff, and they like throw in the, you know, one of the Kennedys is going to come back from the dead, and you know, he's going to be, you know, in Dallas on this date, and like, yeah, they threw in all this like BS,
yeah,
to fundamentally distract from the fact that they were generally like directionally correct. And we've seen this from the Epstein files, and of course we've seen no justice from the Epstein files. But you told a story, I can't remember the artist, you don't have to name whoever it was, as I tell, but you told the story to me the other night about like artists with no inner soul, with several different handlers answering specific questions. And it was just like the same force that is coordinating this satanic child abuse, human trafficking, blackmail ring, utilitarian, Machiavellian philosophy seems to be the same force that's literally like purchasing the souls of talent in order to just exploit them and like run that. Like, you've seen what's happening with Shia LaBeouf, and you mentioned Britney, like all these Disney stars, they're like lunatics now. And it's like obvious in conjunction with what we're seeing from the Epstein files. That's because, you know, when they were 9 years old, they had to dress up like Snow White on some rich dude's island and get raped. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me about like what you've seen in the space that aligns with that?
So I was working with this one A-list artist. She was a former Disney star. And it was interesting, man. Like, I've just really never met anybody that had no soul, you know, like, yeah, nothing on the inside at all.
Not even evil necessarily, just soulless.
Yeah, soulless. Yeah. And they had four handlers with them. One was for, you know, food. One was for drugs. One was for like a PR. One was for like, you know, speech. So if you ask this person a question, a PR person answered it for them, and then they kind of regurgitated back to you their form of the answer. So it was like, you know, there was no eye contact. There were very specific rules working with this person. And it's just weird, you know, like I don't know any other way to explain it other than it's just odd. But it feels very dark to be around. There's another artist, you know, you and I were talking about this, but there was another artist I was working with, and another A-list celebrity. And I got really freaked out because all they talked about was cannibalism. That's all they talked about. And this went on for weeks. And like after like the second or third day, I was just kind of like, well, what's going on? Am I being punked? Am I being, you know, messed with? It's just kind of like a hazing thing. Was the person
like joking about cannibalism? Like it always
It was like, it was just straight up. And so I went home, I went home one night and I just started doing research and was looking at like different radio interviews and different interviews from the same person talking about cannibalism. And so, there's just, I think that there's not everybody is bad. You know, not everybody's good, but I definitely believe that there are subsects that you get into where like fetishes get stranger and stranger and stranger. Just like, like Diddy. I don't know if you saw this, but the Blood Boys kind of came out and were talking about Diddy. Yeah. And they would go, you know, go on Diddy's yacht and he would drain their blood. And then they would, you know.
And they go into international waters.
Correct.
And then in the international waters, it's legal. And he would have these blood transfusions of younger people, similar to what we see Brian Johnson doing with his son. His son volunteers correct. To do it, but it's part of these anti-aging experiments.
Yes.
And we've seen that Diddy's aged quite a bit since he hasn't had access to that.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. As soon as he went into prison, by the first time he was on trial and you saw like drawings or whatever of him, you know, he had gray hair. And now looking at pictures of him, you go like, he's aged, you know? And I think that when you look at things like that, that's a fetish, you know? It's some type of, you know, whether you consider that to be health or you consider that to be demonic, it's still a fetish. But I think when you look at things like that and you think about like subcategories and subgroups, who was the English guy that was arrested? He was friends with Prince Charles. He was like Prince
Albert Andrew.
No, he was the TV star for children's shows.
Oh, I forget his name. The crew knows. Just say it in my ear.
Yeah, he Yes, that's another story of like it goes further down. You know, because he openly was talking about cannibalism and you know like you have to eat the hair. And you kind of look back at things like that. And again, not everybody is bad. There's just different groups of different things. And I think when you look at like fetishes, you know, there's a million different things that I'm not thinking about. So I think that there's different levels of groups. I also believe that Hollywood is, you know, definitely run, or at least it was at one point run by some pretty bad people. And they make people do pretty bad things, and you know that's how we get famous actors.
So I mean, obviously we know from Project Mockingbird and things of that nature that certainly after World War II the CIA got heavily involved in the media and Hollywood, and we also know that once any organization has power, they don't just give that power up. So right. MK Ultra happened, they got busted, they burned the documents. I'm sure they just relaunched it under a different name, right? Or they continue to do the same experiments. Same with Hollywood and Mockingbird. But it's interesting to me because now I think of Hollywood as just simply a cutout of the CIA.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, I'd be curious to hear from you. Did you like explicitly witness that, or is it just in the signs of the way that people respond to these questions? Like, did you ever see a situation in which it was like, I don't know, maybe it was around 9/11 and like, hey, you need to do this, you need to say this, you need to push this. Like, was there ever a CIA agent in the room with an artist?
I don't know. I mean, when you're dealing with anybody big, there's always handlers in the room, you know, who knows, like if they're a Fed or if they're what they are. But from the research that I've done, looking at like the CIA and CAA, it was really created after World War II. And the idea was being able to use music, actors, and athletes for propaganda. And that's kind of how it all started. And if you look at it now and you look at, and you go back to like a CAA and you look at who is on their roster, you can draw a line, you know, and, and you can also see like when they're up against Trump or they're up against, you know, the country or they're up against different policies that they don't believe in, they all have the same talking points. They're all saying the same thing. So there's got to be some truth to that.
Can you make it in either the music business or the movie business without like giving up your ass or getting involved in this kind of mutual blackmail?
I don't know about the actors side of things. The music industry, absolutely you can. You know, you're seeing a big shift right now in the music business where the labels used to be in control of everything. And the artists were like, hey, pick me. You know, I want to. And now we're looking at the artists are in control and they're building receipts and building leverage to then be able to go in and negotiate their own deals. And that's kind of how I built my whole career, was just being independent. And I think that that's the best way that keeps you out of trouble. You know, you're not having to, like, even within like labels and things like that, you have people that come in and they ask you to do favors, or if you're asking them for a favor, you owe something in return. So I just tend to believe that the way to structure everything is to be fully independent, own your content, build your brand, and answer to no one but yourself.
Well, and that's not something that's only true for people in music or movies, right? I mean, like, that's
entrepreneurs.
Ultimately, yeah, that's like what we all have to do, because they came down on us with the ESG scores and the DEI stuff, and they basically shut down all white men and any sort of advertising until we went to war with Iran, and then now all the ads for the military are for white people because they exclusively want to kill white people, apparently, because they're trying to take down Western civilization and allow this just total entropy and degradation of our civilization so that they can pick up the pieces and conglomerate into one new world order political class, this like international cabal of trash. And what's crazy to me about this is, like, it seems to me like something that's just been happening the last 10 years, because I've really only been paying attention for the last 5 years.
Right.
But then I'm thinking about like the Catholic Church, and I'm thinking about Rome, like the history of the Catholic Church, not as it is today necessarily, but the history of Rome. And I'm like, oh my God, they've always been grooming little boys, sexually abusing them. Human sacrifice, especially of infants, is something that's been going on since like the oldest, deepest ancient mystery religions. Yeah. This is like part of the same strain of evil that we've been fighting against this entire time. But now the difference is they've developed all of the technology that is like in the likeness of God. So God is defined traditionally as omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-knowing, all-powerful, and everywhere. And with the AI technology that we have, with the nuclear technology that we have, with the surveillance technology that we have, like, we finally have, and I say finally, like terribly, shockingly, I'm terrified, we finally developed this like new Tower of Babel that is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. Like, we're everywhere with the Golden Dome. We're everywhere with AI. We are all-knowing with AI. We have all the power with the nuclear weapons that we have. And so my fear is, like, yeah, we've kind of seen civilizations come and go as every era has struggled against evil. And it seems to be like the things were curving toward goodness. But evil's never had all of the power traditionally attributed to God. And so, like, I'm at this point with this Iran war and this conflict that we're at and this AI race that we're in with China, where I'm thinking to myself, wow, like, Satan never had these weapons before. And obviously, Jesus is more powerful than all that stuff. But, like, dude, has evil ever been more powerful?
No, I mean, well, here's the thing. You know, you dated back like 10 years and then you're looking at 5 years. I just feel like in the past 5 years, there's been a massive shift. You know, it's like things are escalating so much faster. But also people are waking up and they're doing their own research and they're digging. They're not, you know, like, if you told me something, you know, I would take your word for it. I would also go home and research it. Yeah. And form my own opinion. And I think you're seeing a lot more of that now, because I don't think anybody trusts anybody any longer. And I think, you know, doing your own research and coming up with what you believe after researching facts is probably the best way to go to work. You know, like, talk about like AI. One thing that I think is evil is, so Spotify, for example, I'm not a fan of Spotify at all. You know, their new terms of service is wild. So any artist that's out there listening, you know, beware of Spotify, and also always like read the terms of service, because you know, most people just click on the terms of service and they agree to it. If you read that terms of service, you're giving up your likeness. You're giving up the likeness of your voice. You're giving everything up. Spotify can go in and they can create an AI version of you and call it whatever they want to call it.
Just like Amazon did. When products would be successful on Amazon, Amazon would go in and source the same product from the same factory and they just sell it and then outrank their own inside stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's evil. You know, I think that's evil. I think it's evil. It's evil. Yeah. The AI thing is
when they're cranking everything at 440, which we know it just like keys everybody up to.
So, right. And that's interesting, man, that you bring that up, because you know, like Spotify and YouTube both, if you're looking for like pure tones, if you want 440, 432, 888, 369, whatever pure tones, they offset those tones. So you're not getting the pure tone from it. You know, so I'm a big believer in sound frequency. I use sound frequency for healing and headaches or sleeping or anything like that. Cause your body vibrates. Your body's like a tuning fork.
Yeah. Crank Hillary Clinton's voice through the vibroacoustic bed.
That would be terrible. Well, it's probably the adrenochrome that they can't get any longer.
All right. We're coming up on a break here in about 2.5 minutes. And I'm going to talk to you more on the other side before the legendary, Royce White takes over. Folks, they're actually going to shut down InfoWars this time. It's a matter of weeks. Certain things are going to go first. InfoWars.com is going to go first because they're not paying any of the bills and the internet's going to get shut down. I'm told, I don't know what the exact date is, and there's always room to nudge, but I'm told April 15th is basically the end of InfoWars, as you know. Now, it's not the end of the information war. It's not the end of Alex Jones or Harrison Smith or Chase Geiser or whoever, the crew. It's not the end of the information war. It's just the end of InfoWars. And when I worked for InfoWars, I worked tirelessly to ensure that no matter what happened to that building, to the logo, to the domain names, Alex Jones would always be on the air. I established the Alex Jones Network. I made the LLC without being asked to, without being told to ensure that he didn't own it so that it couldn't be taken from him with the shutdown. I built the brand. I made the partnership with Bigly for the AlexJonesStore.com to ensure continuity of revenue for the next revolution of the information war. And the best thing you can do by far right now is to go to the AlexJonesStore.com. And get something, anything. All the products are incredible. I've worked on several of them myself. I've sourced them. I've spoken to the people who design them and create them and ship them. I saw the back end of the operation, both on the InfoWars side and the Bigly side, who runs the AlexJonesStore.com. And I can tell you that these products are 100% undeniably, unequivocally the best products in the market. Whether you want the Life Force for the N80 Plus, whether you want the T3 for the purest form of iodine you can possibly get. I mean, if you love Survival Shield, you're really going to love the new iodine that's launched on the site. If you want the methylene blue, which Hollis here absolutely loves. I like the capsule version better.
Unlimited power.
I mean, it's the best stuff ever.
I love it.
And the methylene red has been super improved. By the way, I could tell you all stories about that whole experience of developing that. It is the most powerful substance I have ever been involved in working with. Get the methylene blue with the methylene red. It's designed to super enhance the effects. We started out, we launched it, we got out of the gate as quickly as possible. I reached out to the supplier and I said, hey, it's not supposed to be methylene orange. We found another supplier. It's methylene red. Now improved, now better products, and it will super enhance the effects of methylene blue. Go to the AlexJonesStore.com right now and be the reason Alex will always be on the air.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down to make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
my parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. How sort of put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. You're listening to Chase Geyser.
I do think we'll have universal high income. We're basically just issuing money to people, you know, because the output of goods and services will so far exceed the money supply that, that effectively you have deflation, because just deflation is just the ratio of the outputs of goods and services to the money supply. So if the rate of growth of goods and services far exceeds the rate of growth of the money supply, which I predict will happen, you will have deflation.
Yes. And a lot of
all right, so spinning up new- he's talking about how there's going to be massive deflation in the age of AI. Not inflation, but deflation, where your money becomes more valuable, right? Because the output of production is going to be so much higher. But the part that, like, nobody is talking about, dude, is if there's massive deflation and a dollar is suddenly worth $10 and you're locked in on a mortgage where you still owe 200 grand, Like your income might go down, everything at the grocery store might go down, but you still owe the bank the old value of the money, right? And so like inflation is terrible because you lose your buying power, but deflation is also an existential threat because you have massive foreclosures, prices plummeting, banks shutting down. I mean, this is like, this whole AI thing is going to be like radically disruptive. And I know there's implications for artists with stolen likeness and stolen voices, and then actors, you know, they're getting replaced by AI and everything. Yeah. But like, what are your thoughts as somebody who's been in business, somebody who is a business owner now and has seen how technology has disrupted in the past? I mean, are you freaked out about what's coming with AI?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm freaked out. I think that one thing, obviously, you know, I was talking to Ian Carroll about this last night. I believe that you have to start trademarking everything. Matthew McConaughey was really the first actor or artist to go in and trademark his likeness, because they know that they know what's coming. I did a record deal in 2005. And the contract took about 6 months to get through, to finalize this record deal. And the big thing within the contract, and the reason why it took so long, was because the record label was definitely shifting into that mode of they want to own your likeness,
right? Because there's no money in selling CDs anymore,
right? So meaning like, If the drummer wanted to go do a voice for Bob's Burgers or something like that, they owned his likeness. So they would own his voice. And I think that, you know, with like talking to Ian last night, I told him, I was like, you should really talk to your attorneys about trademarking your likeness. Because what happens if somebody comes in and they trademark it, you know, or they trademark yeah. Ian Carroll? Or they trademark Chase Geyser, mm-hmm. or what have you. So like trademarks are, you know, they're not crazy expensive. There's something that you can do that is just like a security blanket. And I think that, you know, artists should really be looking at trademarks. If you have an idea, trademark it. You know?
Yeah. The thing is so crazy to me about it, when I think about the AI thing, I'm like, obviously from a business standpoint or as an artist, it makes sense to trademark your likeness. And I know that it's just because it's obvious doesn't mean that people actually do it or act on it. But like, it's so hard for me to worry about that when I'm thinking about like Palantir and the military industrial complex. And I'm thinking about what happened with the Patriot Act, with the surveillance.
Right.
Like, I'm so concerned that I'm going to be defending my family from a horde of radiated zombies. You know what I mean? What do you think the world looks like in 2032, Hollis?
Man, well, did you see the post that one of the heads of YouTube put out? I think it was like last week or maybe a couple of weeks ago.
I don't think so.
He basically made this very ominous post, very cryptic. But he said, like, it's already too late. It's already too late for AI.
Yeah, Pandora's box is opened.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of leads back to, like, Elon Musk with universal basic income, universal high income. You know, I think a lot of jobs are already going away. I was talking to one of my best friends the other night, and he was saying marketing's gone, graphics are gone. You know, you can subcontract these bots out to like basically do everything for you now.
Yeah.
So you're seeing a lot of jobs just completely disappear. And what's really interesting to me with AI is like, I've got a 19-year-old daughter. She's at University of Tampa, and you look at students now, kind of that are freshmen going in, and they have to start researching, you know, what jobs are AI, you know, proof.
Yeah.
You know, what can I go into?
Plumbing, electrical engineering.
Yeah. I mean, and like these blue collar jobs are going to become, these people are going to become rock stars. You know, anything that you can do with your hands, they're going to be rock stars. I mean, plumbers are already like crazy money. You know, it's $250 an hour or something that I pay when I have people work on things. So there's already crazy money, and that's only going to go up. Because, you know, there are robots now that can come in and fix drains and toilets, but you know,
not really,
not really.
Yeah. And it's not reached critical mass in the market.
Right.
I'm just traditionally speaking, everyone's always been afraid of new technology for markets. I mean, they were freaking out when the tractor got invented that farmers were going to go out of business. And it just turns out that, like, instead of dealing with 100 acres, now you have to deal with 1,000 acres,
right?
You have to be more productive. So, like, marketing is a good example because I'm in marketing, and it's not that there isn't a demand for a human to be in marketing. It's just like, hey, instead of making like 4 videos today, I'm going to make 40.
Right.
You know, using these AI tools, or instead of making 4 websites this month, I'm going to make 4 websites a day.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what I've seen scale. But like, I'm trying to think about this like in a Nostradamus mindset, like massive disruption, all the AI owned by the Palantirs and the BlackRocks and the Googles and the Sam Altmans and the Carps and the Palantirs.
Meta.
And Meta. And they're going to own the tech that you're going to have to license from them. I mean, even Sam Altman came out and said, I see artificial intelligence in the future as a utility where you draw from it and it's metered how much CPU that you use. And then that's what you pay for. It's going to be so like instilled or ingrained in everything that we do that it becomes almost a utility, similar to how the internet's kind of become a utility.
Right.
And I see that wiping out and pulling the rug out from under the middle class, minus the plumbers and the electricians and the farmers and stuff. And when that collapse happens, the people are going to want answers and they're going to blame, and the government's going to come in. They're going to do UBI. They're going to have to massively print in order to do UBI. The housing market's going to collapse. We're going to have to massively print in order to sustain that. Meanwhile, we're going to be in the middle of World War III or World War IV, and they're going to be funding that. And it's like, all of the signs, dude, just point straight to collapse. And it's so like, it's so obvious intellectually, but it's such a huge problem that I can't even like fathom it. It'd be like if you told me to like imagine $1 trillion. Like, I get it conceptually, but I can't imagine what that looks like in, you know, a warehouse or however many warehouses. Like, do you not think we're going to just see total collapse in the next 10 years?
Well, I mean, I tend to look at things, you know, always, you know, glass half full.
Yeah.
I'm pretty optimistic,
yeah.
Which is, you know, sometimes it's troubling, but like with music, because I can talk music,
yeah.
You know, with music, one thing that you're seeing is Gen Z and Gen Alpha. They look at Spotify, they look at Apple Music, they look at Amazon Music, they look at these things now as music is a utility. Playlists or background noise. So what you're seeing is a pivot happen right now with the youth. The youth want to get back to vinyl records. They want tangible products. You know, they want to be able to, you're seeing a big trend shift all over the world. They want to go back and they want to listen to records from, you know, side A to side B, top to bottom. They want to read liner notes. They want to look at who produced it. They want to look at who wrote it. They, you know, where it was made, who engineered it. So I always kind of look at things as pivots. And you have to adapt. Everything is constantly changing. It's been, you know, changing radically for 20 years and now speeding up. But I think that looking at music as a utility, you've got an entire, you know, two generations that are looking at it as not being a utility. They're looking at it as being something that's sacred. That, you know, like listening parties are tremendously popular right now, where people are getting together in living rooms. They're putting records on. They're playing side A and side B. They're reading liner notes. They're discussing it. Mm-hmm. So like the big trend in Japan and that's now moving into London and New York, or I'm sorry, LA and
New York, for a real face-to-face experience.
Listening rooms are trending right now. So they started in Japan like 2 years ago, and basically, it's you know, a couple of turntables in a really nice little loungy area with, you know, plush seating and things like that, and they're playing records start to finish, and people can go in and listen, and they're theming nights. So like in Japan, it was like one of them that I was looking at was like 1970s electronic Japanese music. Mm-hmm. And that was the theme for the night. And they would discuss, they would talk about the artist, they would talk about the history, they would, you know, and then they would go in and listen to full records. And then there's discussions, and then they would move on to the next one. Now you're seeing that move into LA, you're seeing that move into New York. I think that with the advancement of technology, you're going to just see people pivoting, you know, because like you look at music again, you look at like music artists. And if you go back to like a MySpace day, you know, MySpace was a brilliant platform for the artist. Sure. And also for the user. But on the artist side, you had all of this great intel, these back-end analytics from heat mapping and, you know, you could go into like subcategories. So if I was looking at who are the top trending bands in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you can dive in. It had all of these, this suite of excellent analytics that the artist could use to move the needle for their sure. career. You look at Facebook now, Instagram, TikTok, all of these things, they're advertising platforms. And they just really want to sell products to your network. You know, you don't own any of this. You're basically a sharecropper on rented property with all of these platforms.
You own nothing and be happy.
You own nothing. And you're seeing now a trend of like people moving off of these sites. They're building their, like one of my buddies, Slowjack, you know, he's very popular on Instagram. He's, you know, amassed a huge following, but now they're moving everything onto their own website where they have heat mapping and they've got all of these different things. Sure. And they're driving people. I just think that everything is going to be a pivot. I don't know.
You don't think it's going to be the end?
I don't think it's going to be the end. I do think that, yeah, jobs are going to go away. But within jobs going away, you're going to see opportunity to go in and create something new.
Jesus Christ, I hope you're right, dude. Because I'm totally freaked out. Not even just about the economy, but just the AI thing in the context of everything our government's doing, in the context of everything every other government is doing, and this whole entire political class and what's happening in Iran and what's happening with the U.S. dollar. Like, it's one of the reasons why I've had like a breath of fresh air from politics for the last 4 months is because yeah. you can only stare into the abyss so long before it's just like it starts staring back.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at my daughter, you know, she's 19. She's based.
Yeah.
I mean, she's yeah. based.
Yeah.
You know,
what generation is that now?
She's Gen Z.
Z still? Okay.
But all of her friends are based, you know? Yeah. And so I think that I always tend to believe that the kids are all right. You know, the kids are going to be all right. They're going to figure it out. And you're seeing like this whole new movement of these younger kids. They're just becoming super based.
Yeah. You know? Some of them even radical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that's most interesting to me about you, Hollis, is what you're doing at the Eighth Room.
Yeah.
Here in Nashville. So I moved back to Nashville. Gosh, it was in December. And I'd lived here from 2010 to 2017. Hadn't been around. Moved back. Our mutual friend Ryan said, hey, you got to go to the Eighth Room for this pamphleteer event. Our friend Davis Hunt runs the pamphleteer.
Yeah, we love Davis. We love the pamphleteer.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe how amazing it felt to be in like almost it's not even an exclusive space, but it is with the future of, it was like the underground right wing dude. And I think there's something about the magic of 100 people who are like basically disenfranchised from the Republican Party because the Republican Party is part of the Uniparty.
Correct.
Coming together and having these incredible events and the amount of influence in the room, whether it's Tucker's team, whether it's some other names I won't mention,
yeah.
like a tremendous amount of influence in a room in this very like unassuming thing. Like it's such, can you talk a little bit about like what that says about where things are going for the right? Because I think we're seeing a massive shift in political infrastructure right before our eyes. I mean, we're having a political civil war right in the midst of having like a real world war.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing is I've got friends all around the world that own pubs or, you know, small little music venues and things like that. And a lot of them are being pushed out. Like if you look at like pubs in London that have been around for forever, you know, generational family-owned pubs, they're being pushed out. They're being squeezed out. Why? Because they're gathering places. They're places for people to come together and talk, socialize, You know, you want to start taking that out. You don't want people gathering. And I kind of look at it, you know, it's been interesting over the past couple of years. And let me just, you know, set it up. Like, I consider myself to just be like a classic liberal, you know. I've always supported gay rights, you know, are what you do. And as long as you're not hurting anybody or affecting me, I'm cool, you know. But now people look at me as being like a right wing, almost like extremist, you know. I just like...
That's what I love about you.
I want people to win, and I want the country to win. You know, I think nationalism is kind of taken over. I think you should be proud of where you're from, and I think you should fight for that. One of the things that was interesting to me was meeting like the head of the GOP here in Nashville, the Young Republicans, different like congressmen, people running for office, running for, you know, state and local offices. And that being brought together at the club was fascinating to me. And my whole thing with them, like especially like the GOP and the Young Republicans, was you kind of have to look at everything from a punk rock perspective. You know, conservatism needs to be punk rock. You know, it needs to be edgy. We need to have more people that are kind of pushing the boundaries. You know, being a conservative now shouldn't mean that you're wearing khaki pants and a polo. You know, you can wear sunglasses and a hat. It doesn't matter. So for me, it was really about bringing people together and just talking about ideas. What else can we do? How can we move the needle? If you've got these young candidates that are running for office, is there anything that we can bring to the table under this kind of one roof of cool, highly influential people? And, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, not the Republican Party, because I think the Republican Party is just absolutely crazy as well. It's the vast majority uniparty. It's, you're not looking at like a MAGA or a Patriot Party. You've got it. You know, the Democrats have always fought dirty, and the Republican side have always kind of like drawn a line in the sand and said, "Don't cross this line. If you cross this line, you know, there's going to be hell to pay." And the Democrats always cross that line. The Republicans then take two or three steps back and they draw another line. That's crossed again. They take two or three steps back, they draw another line, and they just keep getting further and further, pushed further and further back. Yeah. And we need more people that are, you know, willing to stand up and just be like, "Hey, man, I'm fighting back." And we got to get a little bit more rock and roll about it. You know, like there's always been battles and, you know, good versus evil, cool versus not cool, whatever, you know, people that are informed versus misinformed. But if we bring some level of cool back to it and look at how like punk rock guys in the 70s did promotion and passed around and got the word out. And it was very underground from like fanzines. You know, like after shows, people were passing out fanzines and flyers, basically little hand-drawn books, you know, talking about the band, what they're doing, what they're working, what they're into, you know, and punk rock was like very political. And then what they're fighting for. And so they rallied people behind them. And I think that we just have to bring a little bit of that back and make it cool, because it's not cool right now. It's just, it seems like it's us against them.
Well, I think Republicans have always just come off as squares.
Yeah.
You know,
I do too.
They've got this like massive amount of dogma. They push the religious thing. And look, I'm a Christian, and I'll baptize anybody who asks me to baptize. I've baptized a couple people in my life. My good friend's Jim just a month ago. And I'm all about, you know, baptizing nations in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. But then when you're pushing this massive dogma on people, then it's alienating, and then it's leveraged and exploited for the sake of a political end. Like the whole war on terror was just like they tried to kind of weaponize the crusader thing. But like, fundamentally speaking, Republicans have been so weak that we have allowed our civilization to arrive at a place. And these are just the notes that I've been taking as we've been talking about this. Like, people think, oh, it's nice. Chase and Hollis talked a little bit about, you know, Spotify and AI and whether you can trademark your likeness. But like, if you actually read between the lines of what we've been talking about, Hollywood is pushing cannibalism and blood sacrifice. AI is disrupting everything. It'll probably be okay because there'll be opportunities created, but it's destroying everything as we know it. We've got the entire world economy potentially on the verge of collapse because of this, what's happening with the Strait of Hormuz and the next world war that's taking place. We seem to be entering the next world war with no allies, given that when Trump reached out to everybody about protecting the Strait of Hormuz, no one responded. And finally, no one is having any children. And so our population and our entire way of life is collapsing around us. And I love your optimism, and I think you're probably right. I think there's wisdom and positivity. I don't think that it's naive whatsoever, Hollis, but like, dude, if we don't really take seriously this urgency, like Cuba's collapsing right now.
Yeah.
Where the war with Iran is actually a war with China, and we have no allies, and a war with China is in and of itself, by definition, going to escalate into a world war. We've got this population crisis. Western civilization is collapsing all throughout Europe and in the United States because we've allowed 15x the number of Muslims to come into the United States since 9/11. It's like, dude, like you said, the only answer is like rock and roll, dude. Like, the Republicans aren't going to do it for us if it's like GOP as it stands.
Yeah. You know, the getting to like the economic crash that you were just talking about, like what's your view on that? What are you thinking?
Well, I think that under the current monetary system, dude,
it's completely screwed.
It's going to collapse.
Well, the dollar is worthless. It's backed by nothing.
Yes, except for oil. Yes.
Well, is it?
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, not anymore. But I mean, if you were listening to the first
petrodollar, I thought the petrodollar was like, I thought it was removed.
Yeah, everybody said that. But then why are we at war with Iran?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Dude, we're out of time. Hollis, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the broadcast. Everybody should follow Hollis at It's Hollis on Instagram. Check out the Eighth Room, eighthroom.com. I'm going to start living there.
Please.
I love it there. And thank you so much for coming on and talking about Methylene Blue. And I see you got your Volta there. Volta's awesome.
Yeah.
And for bringing my book.
My favorite new book that I'm going to start reading tomorrow by the one and only Chase Geyser.
Yep, Chase Geyser, forward by Alex Jones. But before you buy the book, do not buy that book without going to thealexjonesstore.com first. Folks, look, I've been out of the game a few months and I've been paying attention. I've been trying not to look. But the gravity of the abyss has drawn me back and I can't look away anymore. We are on the edge of so much disruption economically in terms of war. InfoWars is about ready to get shut down for real. This assault on freedom of speech. The CIA is trying to put Tucker Carlson in prison. And meanwhile, there's like an all-out onslaught on your health. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com, not just because the products are incredible, the deals are incredible, everything's sourced, but because you're fighting back. And every dollar you spend at thealexjonesstore.com is around in the heart of the new world order, globalist satanic cabal that's human trafficking and trying to get you not to have any children so your entire way of life and everything you believe can be shot down to hell. And they want to erase Jesus Christ. So please go right now.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.